You can tell stories in job interviews or pitches. If you're pitching a project or pitching for funding, you can use stories in when you're managing a group and working with a group of folks. If you're doing R&D or if you have a marketing department, you can use story to convey information much more efficiently, and also the retention rate when a story is told, because people tend to remember something that is narrative based. Our brains from, 10, 14,000 years of human communication, our brains are wired for story.
You are now listening to the podcast where authors inspire listeners to become authors, the Going North Podcast. I'm your host, certified self-leadership trainer, best-selling author, and book enthusiast, Dom Brightman. And you're going to be listening to a different author that will inspire you to join the business of immortality, known as authorship. Now let the fun begin. How's it going, my friend? It's your host, Dominic Dom Brightman here, just giving you a quick forewarning slash disclaimer that, hey, these podcasts are recorded on average 2 to 3.5 months ahead of the release date. So if you're hearing today's episode, most likely it was recorded 2 to 3.5 months before it was launched. So just throwing it out there in case you hear something that may sound a little off, that's the reason why. Now let's get on with the show. And today on the Highlight Reel Builder for Authors, known as the Going North Podcast, we got another super special, awesome human for you today, courtesy of the wonderful site known as podmatch.com, the wonderful site where podcast guests get to connect with podcast hosts. And if they're cool, they're freaking in. And today's guest is definitely cooler than 30 cucumbers. That's right, indeed. And folks are probably like, dude, I thought the joke was usually cooler than two. Well, yeah, today's guest is cooler than 30, y'all, because we got one heck of a guest for today, because we got an award-winning author in the building, baby. That's right, indeed. My man's won an award for his wonderful work, and on top of that, he's a filmmaker, master storyteller, creative catalyst, as well as an AI aficionado. So this is probably going to be the first one on the show, really. I think we haven't had anybody talk about AI on the show since, I guess, wow, since Guy Moore, is probably like 30 some episodes ago. So let's give it up for Mr. R&R himself, the wonderful Richard Rosser. How you doing today, Rich?
Dom, I am doing fantastic. I'm looking to dive in and have some fun.
Woohoo! Sweet. That's right, indeed. That's the name of the game, keeping the fun on the bun, indeed. And speaking of fun, that goes with creativity, man. So how was it like to discover your creativity? Like, how was the process to finding that? Did you like get it at the age of 13, or was it like something discovered after getting into college, or how was that process, man?
Oh, no, it starts very young, right? Telling stories. My dad was an amazing storyteller. He loved to tell these long sort of jokes, these winding jokes that, they go on and they form characters, and he's got these fun voices, and then you get to the punchline, and sometimes the punchline is like a groaner, right? And you go, oh, all that for this? But you realize that the fun of the joke, it's sort of like the journey, right? The journey isn't just the destination, it's getting there. And so I realized early on that it wasn't just about the punchline, it's about the joke itself. And sometimes when someone tells a story joke, there are parts of it that are funnier, that you laugh harder while they're telling the actual joke itself than you actually laugh at the punchline. So I learned early on at the dinner table, at parties, that my dad had this magic trick, and he wasn't a magician, and his magic trick was story and storytelling. So I developed that. It's sort of the classic scenario. I took my parents' 8mm camera, and when I was a kid, I started making little animated movies and with clay and claymation. And I don't even know how I did it. I somehow realized that if I could get a cable release for this camera, I could click frame by frame by frame. And my parents were like, what are you doing in there? And so, yeah. I'd send off the film and I'd come back and I'd have a little animated movie. So now it's very different, right? You can do it with an iPhone or a, you know, Samsung Galaxy, whatever. It's you can make it and it's right there immediately. But back then, you know, it was a process. And so I ended up going to school in Lexington, Virginia, which is just down the road from Baltimore, Maryland, where you're from. And I took the one film course at this small college I went to. And they had, you know, every school now has a whole film program, digital media, and all that. And this college, when I went there, it had one film course. So I took that. And again, I made an animated movie. It was a 3-minute animated movie, and black and white, didn't have any sound. And I ended up winning a Student Academy Award. And so I went, man, if these people think I have some talent, maybe I should follow this and pursue it. So I did. I ended up moving up to New York and getting in the TV and film business, doing music videos and commercials and feature films and TV shows.
That's what I'm talking about indeed. That's what I'm talking about indeed. And I guess the beautiful part is that I guess in like wow, because I remember hearing one of your past interviews where it's like your parents were able to sneak you in the watch Space Odyssey 2001 at a very young age.
So you listen to one of my other podcast interviews. Yeah, so I was in first grade when 2000, I'm dating myself now, but I was in first grade when 2001 Space Odyssey came out, right? I don't know what my parents were thinking, but they dragged me to the theater and said, okay, we're going to a movie. I had no idea what we were going to see. And we end up watching 2001 A Space Odyssey with the gorillas, you know, hitting the monolith with the bones and then coming into Jupiter. And I mean, it was a seminal experience. I still to this day vividly remember parts of that movie. And I mean, I've seen it multiple times since. But imagine taking a 6 or 7 year old to see 2001 A Space Odyssey. I don't know where my little brother was. I think they just left him alone. But we you know it I mean it changed my life. I was blown away. Yeah. That's hilarious. You remember that.
Yeah, because it's so hilarious. I'm like, oh yeah, so he had a little brother, probably was in the car, whatever. But like, just seeing that so young, it probably has a major influence on you and your work today. So it's like just finding those moments where it's like, oh yeah, that's definitely sticks out, I imagine.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
That's what I'm talking about indeed. And my goodness, and you're able to work your way up to actually be a major part of a bunch of wonderful TV shows, including Grey's Anatomy and Chicago Med. So my goodness, and like how was that process like, where did folks just catch wind of your skills after graduating film school and getting that award under your belt, and you just kept working your way up and kept
Oh,
taking
yeah.
projects, I imagine?
Yep. You know, you work. I worked on the first feature film that I ever worked on was a little movie called The Search for One-Eyed Jimmy. Now, I bet maybe there's one person in your audience who's heard of this movie. Every once in a while, I tell someone that, and they're like, "Oh my gosh, I love that movie!" I'm like, "Where the heck did you see this movie?" Right? So it was this tiny little film that had Steve Buscemi and Samuel Jackson and Anne Meara and it had and John Turturro. It had all these. I was living in New York at the time, so it was, you know, sort of the New York actor crowd, and you know, and we did it. I think it cost $80,000. You know, it was nothing. So that was the first movie that I worked on, and then you know, you just parlay that. It's like a ladder. You know, you work on the next movie. It's a little bit bigger. The next movie, and then I ended up moving out to Los Angeles, and getting in the TV business. And I worked on Lizzie McGuire. I don't know if you know Lizzie McGuire was a
Okay.
show on the Disney Channel. And I got on that, and then one of the producers moved on to a little show called 24 that at the time no one, you know, no one knew what it was. It was this weird show that every episode was an hour in the day, right? So we were going to do 24 episodes instead of just 22, which was the normal run for a show. So the producer said, "Hey, you want to do this show with me? It's a new Fox show called 24." And I said, "Okay, it sounds interesting." And he said, I said, "Who's in it?" And he told me, Kiefer Sutherland. And at that point, Kiefer Sutherland had quit the acting business He was on the rodeo circuit. He was doing barrel racing and all sorts of stuff on the rodeo circuit. And this was his re-entrance back into the TV and film business. He'd never done a TV show. So that was his first TV show. And I mean, as they say, the history, you know, the rest was history. It just blew the doors off. It was, you know, it was a huge, huge zeitgeist show. And part of it was because of, you know, I mean, 9/11 with the whole terrorist attack, it was all about finding terrorists and you know, running down terrorists. And so it really captured the imagination of the whole nation in terms of feeling pent up anxiety and anger and frustration with all that had happened with 9/11 and before that too, right? So it took off and it ran for 9 or 10 seasons and made Kiefer a huge star.
Definitely indeed, yeah. This is one of my always was a big fan of 24. Like back in the day, he used to love talking about that show. And it's like, wow, actually talking to the guys, actually one of the brains behind it, helping to make it a success. You freaking love to see it indeed.
Oh, yeah. Every week we were blowing something up or flipping a car. And, you know, it was one of the first shows, or it was the first show that folks really binged. Now, this is before streaming, right? This is back when Blockbuster Video, remember Blockbuster Video? It was back when Blockbuster was the only way to see content. And over the weekend, you could watch, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 episodes. So people would come in on Monday morning, just bleary-eyed. You say, did you party over the weekend? No, I watched 14 episodes of 24. So that was the first show that people really binged, and you know, just because it was so addictive, that show, you know, you'd watch an episode and then you just go, it's 2 a.m. but I gotta watch another one, right?
Yeah.
It's 3 a.m. and I gotta watch another one. And I mean, it just, yeah. So now it's the norm. You know, people watch a whole season of Yellowstone or whatever over a weekend. But back then, you didn't do that. It wasn't it was a new thing.
Yeah, but it's good that we have that growth nowadays, because you don't have to worry about late fees.
That's right, and you don't have to rewind. Back VHS, they'd say, please, there's a sign in every VHS store, right? Blockbuster or whatever. And it would say, be kind, rewind, right? And they got to the point where they'd charge you if you didn't rewind the tape. They had, so anyway, gone are those days.
Oh, thank God, especially that my brother had to rewind all of his VHS. Is must be kind of hilarious. He's like, oh yeah, remember the part of the movie? Oh, it's gone already.
That's right.
So my goodness, speaking of leaps in technology, my man's now an AI aficionado. So my goodness, so I guess with the wonderful arrival of ChatGPT, I guess like last winter, in a way, I guess you're able to jump on the bandwagon and find some useful ways to make it work for you.
Oh, absolutely. So I do a lot of consulting. I work with companies and I do workshops and seminars on how to take story and implement story at all layers of a business. And as I was doing my workshops last January, just after ChatGPT had come out, I was doing a workshop and someone said, hey, you know what? You could use this new thing, ChatGPT, to help organize and outline a workshop. And I said, well, what's ChatGPT? And they said, you know what? Just sign on here, go in and ask it, hey, outline a workshop on, I was doing a workshop on storytelling for trainers, right? For corporate training. And so I went in, typed out, you know, what would a workshop for storytelling for trainers look like? And, you know, it spit this out. And now some of it was crap. Some of it was amazing. And so I had to sort of sift through it, right? But I realized this technology is really, truly amazing. And if you think about it, we're surrounded by AI technology, right? If you think about Siri and Alexa and Amazon for product recommendations and Netflix for movie and TV recommendations. AI, it's we don't even realize GPS. I mean, the interface with GPS and Lyft and Uber, all those, everything is run through and with AI. Now, ChatGPT was bringing, was the project that brought this to the masses, right? So before, we were communicating through and with AI, but we didn't even realize it. And once ChatGPT came out, it gave the rest of us the ability to harness this new tool, this new technology. And so I use it for brainstorming and outlining, and you know, you gotta be careful because, you know, if you're using it for research, it's not the best, right? Because it can do what's called hallucinate. It sometimes just makes stuff up. There was an attorney who he did a bunch of research for his client. He went in front of the court. He was arguing the case in defense of his client, and he cited several cases. And the judge said, "Wait a second, this sounds a little weird. These don't sound right." And the judge looked them up, and these cases didn't even exist. ChatGPT, the attorney had gone in and said, "Hey, you know, give me some cases that can help me prove my point in terms of the defense of my client." And it had made up from whole cloth, it had made up some cases, including the, you know, McDonald versus Thompson. You know, it had made up the names of the parties in the cases. And so the judge, you know, reprimanded him severely. I don't think he got disbarred, but he was completely embarrassed. Got reprimanded, you know, and so I don't think, I don't think any attorney's done that since because it was so embarrassing. But you you have to be careful. You have to vet the information if you're doing research, especially if you're doing, you know, something that has to do with medical or financial or anything like that. But for creative purposes, and now I view ChatGPT through the lens of a storyteller, because that's, you know, that's how I approach the world. And so when I go in, I'm looking at it to help amplify my creativity and enhance. I've coined the term AI enhanced storytelling. So I'm not using AI. I'm not just saying, okay, go in and write a script and expecting it to pop out. I'm using it to enhance the concepts that I'm coming up with, right? And so that's really the value. I mean, just like a tool like a calculator or a high-end engineering software program, you can't expect an engineer for SpaceX to create a rocket using a pad of paper and a pencil. You know, it's similar. And so in this day and age, with the ability to create and use a tool like ChatGPT, it can help create something much more quickly and efficiently. And it can help us. So we are the critical thinkers as humans. And ChatGPT or any AI, it can't think critically. It can't weigh possibilities and ultimately decide critically on one or the other, right? We're the arbiters of what works and what doesn't. So as I put in a prompt or a question or a query into ChatGPT and I get an answer back, as it generates a response, then I take a look at that and I figure out what part of that works for, if I'm writing a book or if I'm writing if I'm working on a movie, something like that, then I can look at that and figure out what parts work within the parameters of what I'm creating. And so ultimately, that's what we as human beings, that's how we can use this new technology. When I sit down to create in my little room, right? It's like having a philosopher and a composer and a mathematician, a politician, in the same room with me, because there's all this information that's been inputted into the collective memory of ChatGPT or Bard or Bing or any of these AI models that are text generative based.
That's what I'm talking about, indeed. And that's probably the best way to use it. It's like, hey, just use it as one of those ways, a catalyst just to really amplify creativity and really enhance it and just give yourself a nice little launch pad and a starting point. Because sometimes there may be writer's block for some people, but it's like nowadays, I don't think that's really an excuse now.
I know. Well, that's so true, Dom. You know, it's a great antidote to writer's block or blank pageitis. In the past, There are various tips and tricks and techniques to get past writer's block. I mean, I've heard, okay, you know, just get on your computer or typewriter, you know, and just start typing, right? Anything, you know, type up your laundry list, type up your grocery list, and it'll get your juices flowing. Well, with ChatGPT, you can jump in and just say, hey, give me some ideas on how to market myself as a graphic designer, or give me some ideas on how to reach folks on social media, or for some social media posts that will get folks interacting, right? And so you can prompt this technology to really just sort of like jump off, right? And it really can get you started. And so, and again, it can help you think outside the box because it's got all these references. I mean, OpenAI, who created ChatGPT, fed billions and billions of web pages and master's theses and doctoral dissertations and academic papers and books, you know, voice records, etc., into the system. So it's pulling from all this information. So when you give it, when you give it a prompt or a query, it's coming from the point of having all this information out there. I mean, it's like going to the library and opening up, 100 books in front of you on a subject and being able to just pull from any of those at a moment's notice. It's really, truly unbelievable. And I know there are negative aspects. I mean, right now, the writer's strike and the Screen Actors Guild strike are both going on in Hollywood. And I know that, you know, people are anxious about AI, and rightfully so. I mean, it's ultimately going to put some people out of work. But the people who are able to look at this technology and harness it and figure out a way to use it are going to be, they're going to be valuable, right, in terms of the workforce. And so, you know, it's sort of like the internet. If you meet someone today who doesn't know how to go on the internet and research using the internet or find some data using the internet, I mean, how can they exist in the world? How could they exist in a working for a business if they can't access and don't understand how to use the internet? Well, it's going to be the same with AI. Mark Cuban says, you better start learning about AI or in 3 years, you're going to be a dinosaur. Well, I don't know if he wrote that a year ago or 2 years ago, right?
Oh, you're definitely right about that, because yeah, folks are probably like, oh man, make it stop. But I think even Elon Musk was like, yeah, we got to put out some kind of notice to all these tech companies, like, yeah, oh, stop, yeah, using AI for like 6 to 12 months or something. It's like, dude, come on, man.
I mean, he's, you know, again, Elon Musk, I mean, you know, he knows what he's talking about. He was one of the original investors in OpenAI. But you're not going to stop it. You may slow it down a little bit. I agree that there needs to be regulation, but we're not stopping AI. It's moving forward full force. So it's really a question of how we can put guardrails in place to do our best to ensure that that crazy people aren't using this, you know, like a James Bond movie, using it for evil, right? But every technology, Dom, I mean, think about every technology that has come about. I mean, if we go, let's go back way back into the past, into the 1450s, when the printing press was invented, right? So when the printing press was invented, prior to that, everything was told through the oral tradition. Right? You had bards and minstrels and jesters. I mean, all those people, their job was to tell stories either through music or poems or speeches, preachers, you know, through sermons. Their job was to tell stories through the oral tradition. And when this new thing was invented, the Gutenberg press that could print books, now all of a sudden books were going to be available to the masses. Now, obviously, it took a little bit longer to get books out to folks than it does the internet now, right? But the point being that all these people freaked out, the jesters and the bards and the minstrels, they freaked out and thought, oh my gosh, I'm done. Everyone's just going to learn all this information from books now. But think about what, 600 years later, think about how many people make their living as storytellers besides books, right? We've got stand-up comedians, we've got singer-songwriters, actors, performance artists. I mean, it's incredible. TikTok influencers and social media influencers. So think about how many jobs there are with that people convey information or communicate through things other than books, and they tell stories, right? And so, you know, it's going to be the same thing. Think of how many jobs the internet created that didn't exist 30 years ago. Web designer, right? A UI, UX developer. I mean, there's so many jobs now, and it's going to be the same with AI. There are going to be so many different jobs developed to merge with and move forward with AI that, I mean, we haven't even conceptualized, right? Because we don't know all the possibilities that there are for this technology. So yes, some jobs are going to go to the wayside, but other jobs are going to develop based around this technology, using the technology, but also using existing content, videos and podcasts. I mean, think about podcasts, how many podcasts there are at now. Now, one ever thought that there would be so many podcasts and that podcasts would be so popular. You know, everyone thought it was just going to be video. So things change in very surprising ways as we harness new technology.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about indeed. Funny enough, I think apparently, I'm assuming this was real. I wasn't at the Rams game, but apparently they had one for robots that looked close to humans at the darn Rams game. So it's like, oh yeah, the robots are coming. That's right, indeed. We're going to have AI machines.
Right. Yeah. I mean, now, did they have to pay for tickets?
That's a good point. Didn't even bring up that board about the time. That would be hilarious.
Even better, the people who brought the robots, were they able to go in the HOV lane? Were they able to drive in the HOV lane because they had a robot in the passenger seat?
So that's where AI might be developing there. We might have to see.
That's right. You know what? You got me here because I went fast because I was able to go in the HOV lane. Now stay in the car, but I want to go see the game. No! I told you, no see the game today.
Have an AI baby in the stroller. It's going to be a forever baby. It doesn't grow up.
I want a hot dog. Shut up and suck on that chip.
Oh, that part again, I probably just act like one of the passerbys being like, wait, what did he say to his baby?
Right.
Like, chip, huh? What?
Oh, crazy. Yeah, I hadn't read about the Rams game. I didn't realize that there were robots at the Rams game.
Yeah, I was a post up. I just ran past like yesterday, just scrolling through the media, but it was hilarious. But my goodness. So I guess basically with you being a master storyteller and all your wonderful consulting work. So basically, how does that work for those aspiring to be better storytellers?
Well, I work with entrepreneurs and startups. I work with existing businesses, and I work to help folks harness the power of storytelling. And so one of the things we do is I do workshops, seminars, where we dive into storytelling and we explore just sort of everyday storytelling, like how to tell a joke or an urban legend or a tall tale. And people have a lot of fun telling those kinds of stories, right? And as they tell those stories, they develop storytelling techniques that we then take and we use as a template for other types of storytelling. You can tell stories in job interviews or pitches. If you're pitching a project or pitching for funding, you can use stories in when you're managing a group and working with a group of folks. If you're doing R&D or if you have a marketing department, you can use story to convey information much more efficiently, and also the retention rate when a story is told, because people tend to remember something that is narrative based. Our brains, from, you know, 10, 14,000 years of human communication, our brains are wired for story. So you can convey information much more efficiently and people retain that information when it's based in a story. They remember that. And there's, in fact, Dom, have you ever heard of the concept narrative transport?
Ooh, No, I never have.
Okay, here we go. So one of the most powerful parts of storytelling is this concept of narrative transport. So when I'm telling a story to an audience, and again, the audience may be just one person. I may be just out to lunch with a friend and I'm telling a story about something that happened over the weekend, or I could be telling a story to, 150 folks at an event. But what I do is, as I tell that story, as I get into the details of the characters and the story, it transports, that story transports the audience to another time, another place where the story exists, right? So, I mean, if you think about your favorite book or your favorite movie or a TV show or song, right? As you're watching, you're listening to, you're absorbing this story, you sort of you become one with the story. And so all sorts of stuff could be going on, right? You've got a pizza in the oven and the timer's going off, it's dinging, and someone's knocking on the door trying to deliver something from Amazon, and everything just fades away. Why? Because you've been transported by this story to another time, another place with these characters. And so that's narrative transport, when everything ceases to exist, right? We stop thinking about, oh, I've got to check my text. Oh, I've got another meeting in an hour. You stop thinking about that, and you become absorbed by the narrative, by the story itself. And so that's a really powerful concept, and it works in terms of keeping an audience involved in what you're talking about, right? So you can create a story about your product or service. Founder stories are amazing, right? Because they tell us where an idea for a story or a product came from. And those are what really convey the essence of a company or product or service to customers. So we dive in and we figure out how to use story at all layers and levels of a company, not just marketing, but between departments. Because a lot of times folks who are creating or making a product, they don't have a lot of interaction with the folks who are out selling. And if someone goes out and sells to a customer and the customer says, "Oh my gosh, I love the product, and I actually use it for this as well as, task B instead of just task A." Well, if the salesperson comes back and tells that story to the folks in R&D or marketing, then all of a sudden they may able to open up into a new market or a new sub-market, right? So there are all sorts of possibilities with story that can really help transform a business besides just marketing and advertising.
Yeah, definitely so right indeed, and you're so right about that because it helps folks have that true clarity. Because kind of like what you mentioned earlier with the wonderful days before the printing press, where we had to really orally share stories to
Right.
share information. So it's like, hey, it still works to this day, even
It
if
does.
folks.
It absolutely does.
Yeah, that's right indeed. Even for those who still do the whole death by PowerPoint thing, where they try to put the story on the door PowerPoint.
Well, and see, I mean, it's everything in moderation, right? If you just get up and it's just a PowerPoint, slide after slide after slide, packed with numbers and information, you have to infuse some real life into it. And so if you interweave a story into your PowerPoint presentation that puts into action the data that you're talking about or the statistics you're talking about, then all of a sudden people can understand in real life what's happening, right? As opposed to it just being a bunch of numbers. One of the breakout sessions that I do in my workshops, seminars, is I give folks a technical description, and we transform that technical description into an experience, right? So I first read, it's very short. It's like a 50 word thing. It's about Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. And it says, the concert hall, we're there for a concert, and it's a symphony in four parts. The first part is a scherzo in A flat minor with a modal beat that, and all of a sudden people are going, what? Because it's too technical. They can't latch on to what it's talking about. And I say, okay, I've got an extra ticket to this show tonight. Who wants to go with me? Crickets, right? And I say, well, what's wrong? And everyone says, it sounds boring, And I say, well, how can we spice it up? And then I tell them another version. And I say, I was sitting in the concert hall and the symphony started to play and they played four notes, bum, 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 bum. And then they repeated those notes. And then they went off into sort of an airy, a light part, right? And then everything happened. And then, you know, and ultimately there was a standing ovation for 2 minutes for the orchestra after it finished. And then I say, all right, who wants to go hear this now? And every hand in the room raises. And I ask why? And they say, because I was sitting right there next to you as experiencing this symphony as though I was there, because I created, I took this technical description that was too abstract to really be understood by a layperson. And I gave it an experience. I created an experiential description of this symphony. And so I give each breakout group a technical description. One's about a corn dog, one's about a roller coaster, one's about a bicycle, but they're so technical, you can hardly even really understand what it's talking about. And so the breakout session is how to transform that technical description into an experience. And the people who are, you know, who are working on the bicycle, one of the things that they always come up with is the wind flowing through your hair as you're riding the bicycle down a hill, right? And that's like classic, you know, or trying to balance the bicycle. And so those things are, they tap into a shared experience that we have of a bicycle or a roller coaster, right? And so those are some of the techniques that I work with folks on to realize this power of using story to communicate in really all, again, all layers of a business.
That's what I'm talking about indeed. That's what I'm talking about indeed. That sounds like one of the fun parts of the workshop. I didn't know as you were going through it. Have you ever seen that? I guess it was probably, well, not again, a lot of sales training, I guess it involves it. The whole sell me this pen exercise.
Oh, right. Yes.
It sounds like a more fun version of that.
Well, it is. It's really interesting. Another one that I do is I ask everyone to think of a sense memory from their childhood. Mm. And then I get them to think about that and sort of lock that in, right? And then I say, okay, now let's take that sense memory and let's create a haiku. Now, I don't know if everyone, you know, listeners know what a haiku is, but a haiku is essentially a little poem that is five syllables, seven syllables, and then five syllables. And so it's one of the shortest sort of versions of a story that you can create, right? And so everyone, if I just said to them, okay, create a haiku, I mean, folks would spend 10 or 15 or 20 minutes just trying to figure out what to create a haiku about. But because I start with this sense memory, they've already got something in their mind. And so the haiku, it literally just flows. And we've had folks come up with haikus. This one woman came up with a haiku about her mom used to rub her forehead when she was a child. And another guy came up with a haiku about the fact that he and his father had only hugged once in his life. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are incredible. Another one came up with remembering the smell of hush puppies, right? Those little cornmeal, little fried things, you know? And so these haikus end up tapping into these memories from childhood. And so in 17 syllables, you can end up with an incredibly powerful emotional experience that is really captivating and compelling. And so what I'm doing with this is I'm showing folks how easy it is to create something that's, first of all, it's short and sweet, but second of all, it's really just packed with emotion, because that childhood memory, it really gets folks to create this haiku that is based in emotion and a memory from childhood that really speaks to folks. And again, when you know, someone says a haiku with this basis of a childhood memory, there's narrative transport, and there's also a shared experience there, right? Because, you know, a lot of different people have experienced, you know, smelling hush puppies or fried chicken or cornbread or, you know, and so it taps into sort of our collective shared experience. And really that's one of the most powerful facets of storytelling for managers and business owners, because if you can tap into a shared experience, then they can understand what you're creating and why you've created a business and why they should buy your product or service.
That's what I'm talking about. Indeed. Powerful right there. That's right. Indeed. Gotta love storytelling and being able to make that a wonderful skill and craft at it. My goodness. It's like making, it's like turning folks into blacksmiths, making them the ability.
It is. Yeah. It really is. Wordsmiths.
There we go. That's the word I was looking for.
That's right. Instead, that's right. See, but the process is collective, right? I mean, if you think about a comedian like Jerry Seinfeld, right? Jerry Seinfeld, he had the most popular show in TV. And now, every once in a while, he says to himself, you know, I really need to go and do a new show. Well, he doesn't just go out on stage and riff for 2 hours or an hour and a half. He starts from the beginning. He goes to his local comedy place that he's been going for, you know, 40 years, and he creates some material. He comes up with 10 minutes, and he goes in there and he does the 10 minutes. And then out of that 10 minutes, maybe he gets a minute of gold, Jerry, right? He gets a minute, maybe a minute and a half, and he saves that stuff and all the rest of the stuff he throws in the garbage, right? And then he comes up with some more material. And the next week or month later, you know, he's there again, and he's got his minute and a minute and a half of great stuff and another 8.5 minutes. And so he ends up putting together over months, he puts together an hour and a half or 2 hour show, right? But it takes him a while, and it doesn't just appear overnight. And so that's, you know, if Jerry Seinfeld, one of the, you know, most successful comedians, is spending that much time, effort, and energy creating a show, then the rest of us, you know, it's a process, right? And so again, you know, we might create a haiku, and the first version, it may not, you know, we may need to change a word or change a phrase. And it's all about honing the process. It's about the iterations of what we're creating. And again, going back to the AI, that's how AI can help us, right? It can help us brainstorm possibilities, but it can also, very often, when I've got something that I'm loving, I'll take it, I'll paste it into AI, ChatGPT, and I'll say, make this better, or what suggestions do you have to make this more emotional or funnier? How can I add some humor to this, right? And AI will come back and give me some suggestions on how to edit, how to make whatever I'm working on better, more funny, you know, whatever my goal is. And it can help me think outside the box. It can help me edit whatever I'm working on so that it's more appropriate for the audience that I'm delivering to. So it's an iterative process that we go through, getting better and better at storytelling. And that's one of the things we also have to do with stories, is we have to think about them and plan them out a little bit so that we're not just right up in front of a group riffing, right? We want to think about the beats and how a story works and what the point is to a story. We all have folks that, you know, in our lives that sort of tell pointless stories, right? And they just go on and on, and they get to the end and you sort of say, okay, what was the point of that story? You know, I know you went to the store and they were out of Hunt's tomato ketchup, and you get home and you decide to have steak instead of fish sticks, and you don't need the ketchup. I mean, what was the point of the whole story, right? And they ramble on. And so a story needs to have a point, and sometimes the point can just be sheer entertainment. You know, I mean, we've all, yeah, I'm going to go watch some mindless TV, right? Or I'm going to read a beach book, right? A summer beach book. And so, all it is entertainment. You're not expecting to learn anything from it. It's just pure entertainment. So a story, it can be just pure entertainment, but the best stories, they entertain, they persuade, they educate, they do multiple things. And so again, that's what I'm doing, is I'm working with folks to figure out how story can really transform communication from boring technical descriptions full of facts and data that people really can't latch onto because it's too abstract, into these experiences that people just, they can't get enough of.
That's right, indeed. They can't get enough, indeed. That's right, indeed. That's right. They won't stop either.
That's right. That's stop. Right.
So my goodness, Assistant Bay has been on a bit of a many wonderful interview tour, sharing his wisdom across the wonderful interwebs in the magical globe. Is there a question that you wish folks would ask you more often when you're on these podcasts?
No, we have covered a lot of ground today. I mean, we've had some fun talking about story and AI and ChatGPT. In fact, I wrote a book which is called ChatGPT Simplified. And so, when I started working with ChatGPT, I realized, okay, this is technology. And there are all these terms, neural networks and, all these terms. And I started thinking, there are a lot of people out there who are going to be a little intimidated by some of the terms and some of the technology. And so I wrote this book, ChatGPT Simplified, which is a layman's guide, right? It's a guide to how to use this technology from a storyteller standpoint. So it really deals with creatively using this technology of AI and ChatGPT and using it for personal and professional growth, how to use it to amplify your message and to enhance your creativity. So it's available. My website is aiexplained.ai. It's really simple, aiexplained.ai. So if you're interested, you can check out, there's a link straight to Amazon for my book, but you can also contact me if you're interested in talking to me about a workshop or seminar or something like that.
So I'm talking about indeed. So how long it take you to put the book together, man, especially after discovering ChatGPT?
it took me about a month and a half, and it probably would have, if I had written the thing all on my own, it probably would have taken me more like 3 or 4 months. But I use ChatGPT to enhance my writing. So I was coming up with all the concepts and then I used ChatGPT to help me edit and help come up with ideas in terms of fleshing out some of the chapters. And so it's written, it's AI enhanced storytelling.
There we go. That's right indeed. He's a product of his own product. You love to see it. That's right indeed.
So true.
That's right indeed. So speaking of ChatGPT Simplified, if that book were a food, what would it be and why?
What would it be? It would be a piece of key lime pie, because you can't resist a piece of key lime pie. And then when you taste it, it's extraordinary, right? It's got all these tastes. It's got the graham cracker crust. It's got the key lime. It's got the cream on top. It's just this melding of flavors, just like ChatGPT takes ideas and it melds them together and just spits out these incredible possibilities for creation.
So I'm talking about indeed. Funny enough, I think you're the first one to say key lime pie. So yeah,
excellent. It just popped into my head, and that's
right. Indeed, the only lip pies we got is pizza, and one guy said flapper pie. So yeah, we finally have a key lime pie to add to the pie collection.
Very good. I love it.
That's right, indeed. So my goodness, coming down to the magical question that every guest gets to receive, and that is, if you'd all wake up tomorrow and you were 25 again, but you're still in the current year, what advice would you give to yourself?
Embrace life. Do everything you can to have fun and explore. Discover what possibilities are out there and share that. Share that with folks.
Woohoo! That's right, indeed. Share with folks, indeed. Sharing is caring. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. Sharing is caring. Oh, that's right, indeed. My man, big homie Rich, has been sharing a whole bunch of wonderful wisdom today. That's right, indeed, for some good old AI-enhanced storytelling. That's right, indeed. The cure-all you've been waiting for. That's right, indeed. It's not snake oil. That's right, indeed. It's not even crude oil. That's right, indeed. It is some wonderful, good old AI, some good old assistance. That's right, indeed. This ain't just practice anymore, y'all. This ain't 2001 practice. This
That's
is
right.
Where it's going to help take you beyond. My man has helping to take folks beyond just a regular humdrum, clear eyes, monotone storytelling to new heights, y'all. That's right, indeed. So, my goodness. So, for those that need to keep in contact with you and all your journey and heck, even cop some copies of your magical book and share with folks, what's the best way for folks to do so?
They can reach me at Richard@AIExplained.ai. Richard@AIExplained.ai.
Woohoo! That's right indeed. Well, there you have it, folks. Reach out to the big man, the radio Richard, y'all. That's right indeed. Man's got knowledge for days. That's right indeed. You only probably only got 1% of the total 100% of the giant pie that a man has in terms of the knowledge. And since AI is expanding, my man's expanding his mind indeed. So get in contact with them. Bring him into your organization, y'all. That's right indeed. You definitely won't regret it. You won't have a boring story anymore. You'll finally have a story right with a wonderful point. That's right indeed. You won't even need a ballpoint pen for maybe you need a ballpoint pen for the point of the story.
No ballpoint pen needed.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go. Good. That's the point, my friends.
Right. Dom's got a point there.
There we go. And it ain't even a PowerPoint either. So my goodness, before another random rabbit hole appears, any parting words before we close up shop?
Nope, just explore and have a blast.
If you're listening to this, that means you're one cool individual. If you want to be cooler than two cucumbers, share this episode with someone that you think will enjoy it too. And be sure to subscribe and keep being fabulous.